We are in Exodus chapter 38, getting ready for verse number 24. We've been looking at kind of a summary of all the artifice work, the manufacturing work for the components of the tabernacle that were done by Oholiab and Bezalel, who have been gifted by God to put all of this beautiful stuff together, to bring the vision given by God to Moses to reality. And all of this manufacturing is happening during the second half of the first year of the Exodus. And I'll just give you a heads up. We know that the tabernacle will be assembled for the very first time on the first day of the first month of the second year of the Exodus. And so that's the target date for the construction purposes. We've talked about an awful lot of gold and silver and bronze being used in the manufacture of the tabernacle itself. And starting at verse 24, we have kind of a summary of just exactly how much of those resources were being used in this. And keep in mind, as we talk about this, that these raw materials have been donated by the Israelites out of all of the things that they received as part of their back wages whenever they left Egypt. And that all the Israelites, 600,000 plus men, and then their families along with them, they were all made wealthy overnight because of all these back wages in the spoiling of the Egyptians. And so this is just a fraction of the total wealth of the Israeli community whenever they left Egypt, because they didn't give everything. They gave only enough for the resources needed to manufacture the tabernacle. Exodus 38, verse 24. All the gold that was used for the work in all the construction of the sanctuary, the gold from the offering that was made, was 29 talents and 730 shekels by the shekel of the sanctuary. Now, keep in mind, these are not coins. Coins didn't come into existence until long after this in world history. This is referencing a weight. Now, typically, when I talk about a talent, I use the 75-pound equivalent, although in my studies and in my research, I've seen that perhaps the most ancient forms of the shekel or the talent may have been about 60 pounds or so. So I'm going to give you a range here in a bit as to exactly what this represents. The 730 shekels represents a fraction of a talent. I think there's like 3,000 shekels in a talent. And so 29 talents of gold is going to be basically 4,200 pounds on the low side, if it's a 60-pound shekel or 60-pound talent, all the way up to 5,250 pounds of gold if you're using like a 75-pound talent. So we're talking about several tons of gold that has been donated to the work of the artificers of the tabernacle. And that means that there was multiple other talents that were still kept by the Israelis. So we're talking about millions of dollars of modern-day buying power involved in this. Verse 25, the silver from those of the congregation who were recorded was 100 talents and 1,775 shekels by the shekel of the sanctuary. So that's basically, what is it going to be? Six thousand pounds or something like that. And I'm sorry, I can't find my conversion notes here in order to give you the rest of that. But it's going to be multiple tons of silver. And again, probably millions of dollars in our modern day buying power. And then a little reminder here that a beka, a head, that is half a shekel by the shekel of the sanctuary for everyone who was listed in the record, from 20 years old and upward for 603,550 men. So this is a reference to a later census that will be taken, where they will effectively be given a head tax for what they have to give silver-wise for the upkeep of this tabernacle. And so this is one of the places where we see the census count of over 600,000 adult men. And for the Israeli people, adult started at your 20th birthday. That was the majority age. The 100 talents of the silver were for casting the bases of the sanctuary. Remember, there's like little feet that the upright boards are going to be placed in to keep them stable. So the bases of the sanctuary, the bases of the veil, because each of the pillars that hold the veil in place inside the tabernacle, in the exterior court, they're going to have silver bases. And so each of the bases, the 100 bases for the 100 talents, this is talking about all of the different bases totaled up. That was a talent for each base. So each base of these pillars, of these posts, is going to be basically 60 to 75 pounds. To help keep it stable. And of the 1,775 shekels, he made hooks for the capital or for the pillars and overlaid their capitals and made fillets for these are the bits and pieces used to stretch the fabric between these posts to make the fabric fence or to make some of the veils. Now, verse 29, the third precious metal that is used in making the tabernacle is bronze. The bronze that was offered was 70 talents and 2,400 shekels, from which he made the bases for the entrance of the tent of meeting and the bronze altar and the bronze grating for it, and all the utensils of the altar, the bases that were around the court, the bases of the gate of the court, and all the pegs of the tabernacle, and all the pegs around the court. So everything was needed to keep the outside items upright and stretched tight for the guy wires or the guy twines that are keeping them in place. All the bronze is used for that. So when we put all this together, we know that we're talking about millions upon millions of dollars of modern-day buying power that was donated into this building project out of the spoils from the Egyptians so that the tabernacle could be built. Chapter 39, one of the other things that the artificers are responsible for is making the clothing of the high priest and the clothing of the priests that are going to work in this tabernacle. And so that is mentioned next. Verse 1 of chapter 39, from the blue and purple and scarlet yarns, they made finely woven garments for ministering in the holy place. They made the holy garments for Aaron as he who is had commanded Moses. And then we have the overview of all of the different components of the uniform. He made the ephod of gold, blue, and purple, and scarlet yarns, and fine twisted linen. This is the little smock that all of the emblems of office of priest are attached to. The little epaulets up on the shoulders, and the little chest piece on the chest where the Urim and the Thummim are going to be put in. So that's made of these special fabrics. They hammered out gold leaf, and he cut it into threads to work into the blue and the purple and the scarlet yarns and into the fine twisted twined linen in skilled design. So they would take gold, heat it up, beat it out thinly, and then use a sharp implement to slice it into fine little strips or threads, which were then woven in. So all of this is being done over months of time in the second half of that first year of the Exodus. They made the ephod, attaching shoulder pieces, joined it to its two edges. They made this skillfully woven band on it, and it was of one piece with it, and made like it of gold, blue, purple, scarlet yarns, fine twisted linen, as he who is commanded Moses. Then he made the onyx stones. These are the ones that go up on the epaulets, up on the shoulders of the high priest, enclosed in settings of gold filigree, engraved with the engravings of a signet. So it's either recessed or raised letters, according to the names of the sons of Israel. Remember, six names in birth order on one stone, on one epaulet, and then the remaining six in birth order on the other epaulet. He set them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod to be stones of remembrance for the sons of Israel, as he who is had commanded Moses. He made the breastpiece. This is the little pocket where the Urim and the Thummim are going to be placed. He made it. Same thing. All of this fine twined linen. It was square. It's doubled over. And the breastpiece was doubled so that it was a span by a span. That's basically 9 inches. And he set it in four rows of stones. And then it has the stones listed again. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. Each of these stones, verse 14, were according to the names of the sons of Israel. They were like signets, each engraved with the name for the 12 tribes. So that, again, either recessed or raised lettering, so that Aaron will carry the names of the 12 sons of Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel, into the presence of God each time he enters in as the priest. And this little breastpiece is going to be tied to the two epaulet shoulder pieces with silver woven chain, gold woven chain, and then it's attached to the ephod lower down with a blue lace that keeps it in place so that it's not flopping all over the place whenever he's going to do his duty. Then we have this robe of the ephod. It's woven all in blue. It's got an opening like a garment, which means its neckline is reinforced. This is underneath the ephod. This is the main piece of clothing, I think. And it has on its hem pomegranates of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen. So little pom-poms that are dangling from the bottom of this robe. And then verse 25, they also made bells of pure gold and put the bells between the pomegranates all around the hem of the robe between the pomegranates, so it alternates back and forth for the ministering as he who is had commanded Moses. So as we talked about when this was first described, whenever the high priest is doing his work, he jingles. He jangles. He makes music. And this lets everybody within sound range know that their high priest is living and active on their behalf. And I think it's a beautiful, picture in our minds for that. And then we've got the coats, the outer garments. In verse 27, they're woven of fine linen for Aaron and his sons. So they've also got these special coats. They've got a turban of fine linen, caps of fine linen. These are probably something similar to what we think of as a baker's hat that they wear on their heads whenever they are ministering. And then they've got linen undergarments of fine twined linen. So think of long-legged shorts that probably go down between the lower thigh and the knee. And then we've got the sash of fine twined linen in blue and purple and scarlet yarns embroidered with needlework, as he who is had commanded Moses. So this is the fabric belt that goes around the waist. And then they made the plate of the holy crown, that's how it's described, of pure gold, and wrote on it an inscription like the engraving of a signet. And this time I really do believe the letters are raised. And in Hebrew, it reads, Horesh LaYahweh, holy to he who is. And this was tied to the turban with a cord of blue, as he who is had commanded Moses. And so this is the wearing of the name of the Lord on the forehead by the high priest to remind everybody that he is doing this for he who is. And this, I think, we talked about at the time that this was first described, is definitely tied to this idea all of us are marked by the name of God. We wear the name of God as we go through our lives. Verse number 32, thus all the work of the tabernacle of the tent of meeting was finished, and the people of Israel did according to all that he who is had commanded Moses, and so they did. And they brought the tabernacle to Moses, and then we have another long list of all of the items we've just talked about. And it finishes that they brought all of these individual components to Moses. Now, Moses has been watching all of this manufacturing going on during the months that it takes, signing off on them, if you will. Yes, that's exactly how God wanted it to look. Maybe he'd do some tweaking. Well, that's not quite there. You need to change this about it. But now everything's done. And I am sure that we're within the 12th month of the first Jewish year of the Exodus. And we are getting ready for the dedication. And so everything is presented to Moses for his final approval, including the uniform pieces. Verse 42, according to all that he who is had commanded Moses, and so the work, so the people of Israel had done all the work. And Moses saw the work, and behold, they'd done it. And as he who is had commanded, so had they done it. And so everything now is finished, and it is good, if we can borrow a phrase out of the book of Genesis. And we are ready for it to be assembled the very first time. And we are told what day that's going to be in chapter number 40. Now, this happens before the first day of the second year, or the first day of the first month of the second year of the Exodus experience. But we're going to use it as our framework for the days that it actually happened. And so let's talk about this new year. If we are correct in 1456 BC being the year of the Exodus, then the second year of the Exodus is 1455. And the first day of the first month of that new year is the 18th going into the 19th of April, 1455. And the reason we have to use two dates for our calendar is because the Jewish day starts at sunset and continues until the following sunset. So everything we're about to read is happening for all practical purposes on our calendar on a Wednesday of 19 April in the year 1455. So he who is spoke to Moses, saying, on the first day of the first month, you shall erect the tabernacle of the tent of meeting. So this will be the first time everything is put together as a whole. Now, they might have tried things together to make sure they fit properly, but that would just be component to matching component. This is when they put it all together. And then it says in verse number 3, you shall put in it the ark of the testimony, and you shall screen the ark with the veil. So effectively, they raise up all of those frames, those tall frames, lock them together in a three-sided structure, and then they put over the tapestry drape. Then they put over the black goat hair drape, and then they put over the outer weatherproofing drapes of the ox skins and the goat skins or the sheep skins. And so now all of that building is enclosed, and they bring the Ark of the Covenant in and put it in the back section first. Now, the Ark of the Covenant, remember, is God's throne. And once they put it in place, based on information we have elsewhere, the long poles for carrying the Ark of the Covenant are on the short sides of the sedan chair of God, of this portable throne, and the posts, these poles, are projecting forward past the dividing line between the holy place where the priests will do their daily work and the most holy place where the Ark of the Covenant is located. And so the next thing they do after they put the Ark in its place in the Holy of Holies is you shall screen the Ark with the veil. So this is the first veil that divides the holy place from the most holy place so that we have a 10 by 10 by 10 cubit cube where the Ark of the Covenant is located. And more than likely, as they put up this screening veil hanging down from above, and it's got four posts, four pillars that are part of its hanging, the pillars are going to be two on one side and two on the other of where those projecting poles of the Ark of the Covenant are coming into the holy place. And the veil will also be draped over those poles, not going all the way down to the floor because of the poles. Verse number 4, you shall bring in the table, that's the table of the bread of God's presence, and arrange it, and you shall bring in the lampstand and set up its lamps. So we've got the golden table of God's presence. It goes to the right side as you're looking at the Holy of Holies inside the tabernacle building. It goes to the right side against the north fabric wall, against the north frame wall. And the lamp, the menorah, it goes to the left side, against the south wall. Then, verse number 5, you shall put the golden altar for the incense before the ark of the testimony and set up the screen for the door of the tabernacle. So the last item that they're going to put into place in the holy place is the altar of incense, the altar of prayer. And so they put it right in front of the veil, I mean, like butted right up against that terminal line between the two places. And that means it's going to be situated immediately between the two projecting poles of the Ark of the Covenant. There is only about, I think it's 18 inches or so clearance on each side of the golden altar of incense. That will be the direction, the path that the high priest will use once a year on Yom Kippur to go into the holy place. And I just want you to picture that in your mind, because the projecting poles of the Ark of the Covenant will never be removed. They're always left in place. Now, the poles used to transport the table of the bread of the presence, the menorah, and the altar of incense, they are all pulled out. Now, what do they do with them? I don't know. I suggest that they probably put them to the side in the holy place, because they are holy items and they're only used on holy objects. And so they have no reason to leave this facility between transports. And so now we have everything in the tabernacle building that belongs in there. So now we can put up the front veil with its five pillars holding it in place. And then we will go out into the front courtyard and put in all the other things that need to be there to make the tabernacle whole. But that'll have to wait until the next time we're in the Word.